It is Friday, August 9th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 22nd through the 25th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes, which includes the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late night passes, plus the main stage. Performing artists include Del McCoury Band, Iris Dement, Jerry Douglas, and others. Registration and information available at KUAF.com.
On this edition of Ozarks, the duo Heirloom explains how they managed to come together across continents. They'll play a couple of songs in the Furman Garner Performance Studio, plus our regular visit with Michael Tilley from thecitywire.com.
But first, a class action lawsuit claims the Arkansas Lottery misrepresented the number of prizes being awarded. The legal action is related to the theft of nearly $500,000 by a former lottery security official who activated thousands of tickets, then claimed the winning one. The lawsuit was filed by Rick Tomboli and another man who claim that even after the lottery learned of the thefts and began an investigation, they continued to advertise odds for winning without adjusting them downward.
They let this multi-billion-dollar operation continue with business by putting these tickets out in the market, knowing that these tickets, several different games that he admitted to getting money off of. On the back of the tickets, it tells you what your odds are to win. How can your odds be the same as what they are on the ticket?
The lawsuit was filed in Pulaski County Circuit Court and seeks class status on behalf of 50,000 lottery buyers. A former security official entered a guilty plea last month in federal court to stealing the tickets and is awaiting sentencing. A call seeking comment on the lawsuit from the lottery's director wasn't immediately returned.
Manufacturing defects blamed for causing the rupture of the Pegasus pipeline in Mayflower have also been blamed for 12 seam failures during a series of previous pressure tests. The results of those tests, released by the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, show issues during testing that was conducted shortly before the pipeline was reopened in 2006, when the flow of oil was being reversed. Congressman Tim Griffin, who leaked initial data about the cause of the rupture, says he's requesting more information from ExxonMobil as well as federal agencies.
I've asked for an in-depth technical briefing on the testing. We're trying to get that scheduled, but Exxon and PHMSA need to answer these questions as we continue to continue our investigation and get more a better picture of this pipeline's history and the best way to move forward.
Congressman Griffin says he's concerned about the pipeline running through the Lake Maumelle watershed, which is the primary source of drinking water for central Arkansas.
Northwest Arkansas has seen its share of rain during the past week, but some counties in Northwest Arkansas have received more rain than others. Charles Dalton of the National Weather Service says the area closest to the Missouri border received the heaviest rainfall.
There were some areas like in and around Harrison and then up towards Omaha, and then right along the Arkansas-Missouri border, there was a swath of, you know, anywhere from 5 to as much as, you know, 9 or 10 inches.
Yesterday alone, Drake Field and Fayetteville recorded just over an inch of rain, while some areas in Benton County received as much as 10 inches of precipitation.
Heavy rain and flooding in Northwest Arkansas has officials working to deal with the aftermath, including displaced residents and destroyed bridges. Tommy Jackson with the Arkansas Department of Emergency Management says the flooding didn't just make bridges impassable, it destroyed some of them.
The bridge at Corinth and Pea Ridge is gone. Another bridge at Sugar Creek and Old Wire Road is closed due to flooding. And again, those are fluid situations. But of course, any time a bridge is washed away by rain, that's a lot of rainfall.
The extent of the damage and cost estimates are unknown at this point. But Jackson says the floods have kept rescue crews and road crews working long hours to combat the effects of the rain.
Bella Vista saw its share of this week's flooding. The Bella Vista Property Owners Association is reporting this morning that all of the golf courses in the city have suffered from flooding in some way, from minimal damage like gravel deposits washed onto the fairways to erosion damage from nearby creeks. All of the courses, with the exception of the Tanier Creek Practice Center, will remain closed while crews assess damage and make necessary repairs. Also in Bella Vista, the POA Water Utility has issued a precautionary boil water notice notice for areas surrounding Watson, Drifton, Chelmsworth, and Sandbridge Drives, as well as areas surrounding Drifton, Winstone, and Longridge Lanes. The boil order comes as a result of a broken water main and a loss of system pressure. Residents in the affected areas are advised to heat water in a rolling boil for at least 1 minute before using it for drinking or cooking. According to the notice, Monday is the earliest time that the boil order is expected to be lifted.
Northwest Arkansas Naturals last night wrapped up a 3-game series against the Corpus Christi Hooks. On a positive note, Nats finished the series with a 12-5 win over the Hooks tonight. The Nats move on to San Antonio to open up a 3-game series there against the Missions.
More rain is likely tonight with a 60% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low of 70 in Northwest Arkansas. In the Arkansas River Valley, a 50% chance of showers and a low of 74 is expected. Mostly sunny tomorrow with a 40% chance of showers and a high of 85 in Northwest Arkansas and a 30% chance of showers and a high of 89 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and a low of 69 in Northwest Arkansas, and there's a 30% chance of showers with a low of 74 in the Arkansas River Valley.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellens. With me on the phone is Michael Tilley, who is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more for the entire region. How are you on this wet Friday?
I was able to get my boat started and get into work today. So far, so good.
Now, I know, you know, parts of Northwest Arkansas have had it in excess of 10 inches. I don't think the River Valley's had quite that much.
Nope, but it was storming all night last night. If you needed to catch up on your sleep, last night was great for that.
Yes. Well, let's talk about something that's not really catching up in Arkansas, and that's manufacturing jobs.
Right, and it's we got to looking around 2010, the manufacturing sector in the U.S. began to the cynic will say it began to bottom out, but the other way to look at that is it did kind of hit a bottom, and it started to increase somewhat, and that's continued in the U.S. and in most states connected adjacent to Arkansas. There has been some slight decline in the last couple months in U.S. manufacturing, but there has been somewhat of a resurgence. But in Arkansas, that hasn't been the case. There are only two states of the states connected to Arkansas. The only other one that's lost jobs is Mississippi, and that was just 500. Arkansas has lost 7,700 jobs between 2013 and 2010. Mississippi has gained jobs. Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas. I mean, Texas is up over 50,000, almost 60,000 manufacturing jobs in the past 3 years. Now, they're all down in terms of manufacturing jobs compared to 10 years ago, compared to June 2003. But, it's not a good trend for Arkansas. And we're down almost 36% from our peak high, which was in February of 1995. So, and that used to represent about 25 manufacturing. These good-paying manufacturing jobs once represented close to 25%. Of Arkansas's workforce. Today, it represents barely 13%. And I think that's kind of the headline numbers. And we talked to, in our story on the City Wire, we talked to Grant Tenniel. He's executive director of the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. We talked to Greg Kaza. He's an economist and a market researcher at the Arkansas Policy Foundation. You know, Tenniel just said Arkansas got hit when the housing sector fell. You know, all of the wood products industry, there are a lot of appliance manufacturers like Whirlpool in Arkansas that got hit hard. Kaza maintains, though, that Arkansas's business climate is not what it should be and that state officials are going to have to do something radically different if they want to reverse the trend.
Well, you know, with your story on thecitywire.com about this, you have the graphic showing states that Arkansas and the states that border Arkansas, the manufacturing trends for the last 10 years. In June 2003, Arkansas had almost 205,000 manufacturing jobs. Is that right?
Yes.
And now in June of this year, it's down to 154,000. We've lost 50,000 manufacturing jobs in 10 years?
10 years, yes. I mean, there are several counties in Arkansas that don't have that many people. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge loss. And we had, the peak we had 249, almost 250,000 jobs. So from the peak employment in mid the mid-90s, in 1995, we're down almost 100,000 manufacturing jobs.
Well, and in that same time, Arkansas's population has grown. So what's happening?
Well, one of the primary things that's happening around the country, and this is mentioned in the story, is that manufacturing output may increase, but that job that used to require 2 to 3 people may now just require one person or no people. I mean, as Grant Tenniel said, his term was there are massive investments in Arkansas manufacturing, but those investments don't bring jobs with them. You know, there was a time if a company invested $100 million in a plant, it was likely going to employ, 500 or 1,000 people. Now a $100 million investment may employ 5 or 10. I mean, it's a rapid shift in how these manufacturers operate.
It's probably too much of a reach to say we're in a post-manufacturing time, but it's hard to think that we'll get back to those numbers that we had.
Well, it is. I mean, it'll have to grow. I mean, it'll have to grow exponentially just if you want to get the labor numbers back up. And one of the things that Grant is excited about, he and several other economic development officials, and we'll have this story next week, are going to go to a manufacturing summit that Walmart is conducting. You know, Walmart has announced this $50 billion program to bring manufacturing back to the U.S. You know, they're trying to encourage as many of their vendors possible to, whatever product they can make in the U.S. instead of overseas to do that. So Walmart is trying to pair up these state economic development officials with some of the vendors. And, Grant's hopeful that could bring some manufacturing back to the U.S. Interviewed Tim Allen at the Fort Smith Regional Chamber of Commerce. He plans on attending that, and he has the same hope. He thinks Arkansas may be in a good position for that, the Fort Smith area, Northwest Arkansas areas, because, sometimes those vendors may want to make product, right under the corporate headquarter umbrella, so to speak.
Well, speaking of jobs, your reporter, Kim Souza, who I think reports and writes in her sleep, because she's quite prolific, she had a story on the citywire.com, I think she posted it for the first time yesterday, about how part-time jobs are growing faster than full-time work.
Right, and this story was a product we've been, as the U.S., as the federal government announces the number of jobs that were added to the employment rolls each month, what they don't often say is that whether they were full or part-time. And so we've seen a rise in the number of economists and market watchers who are becoming critical of the numbers, saying that, these aren't all full-time jobs. These aren't the jobs we normally see. And so what's happening is, for example, there are 162,000 jobs added in July. Well, roughly 47,000 of those were retail jobs, which could be part-time, and 38,000 were restaurant and bar work. Well, we know that's not typically the full-time, career job that we hope that those jobs reflect. And so, the percentage of the part-time versus the full-time is becoming out of whack, so to speak, and that's probably not a technical economic term, but that's just rising. And so the economists are saying this is unsustainable. If this is recovery, it's unsustainable.
Well, and what comes with that is part-time jobs usually don't have the benefits of full-time jobs. So you're talking people who don't have health care or as good a health care as they like, or vacation time, things like that.
Right. And now the other side of that, some argue, and at the CityWire we see this, there are some freelancers who they don't want to work full-time. They want to have 2 or 3 different projects, and they work from their home. That type of thing, and that fits their lifestyle. So there's some of that, but there's not enough of that to make a difference. So there is that angle, but majority of it is just companies, they're not sure what the economy is going to hold. They're not sure what, for example, the Health Care Act is going to mean in terms of what they are required to do. So they just bring on full-time folks and try to handle the uncertainty with that.
Finally, Arkansas Best posted a quarterly income of nearly $5 million. That's good news. That's thumbs up. But Wall Street analysts said we were expecting more.
Yeah, they were hoping for more. That broke down to about 18 cents per share. Wall Street analysts had it pegged at 20 cents per share. Now, the one thing that ABF did do is the analysts thought they would earn about $572 million in the quarter, and instead revenue was almost $577 million. So they bested the revenue estimate. But it's a good report. It's definitely news that Arkansas Best needed. This second quarter report followed a first quarter loss of $13.4 million. Now, for the first 6 months of the year, the company they're still underwater. They have a loss of $8.5 million. But, you know, the labor contract is not fully yet approved. It'll probably kick in the third quarter. That's likely to help to the bottom line for Arkansas Best quite a bit. So the back half of the year for Arkansas Best hopefully will be good. They have been unable to string together consecutive years of positive income since, I think, 2009. This freight recession, as they call it, has been very tough on the company.
All right. Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of thecitywire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more. Michael, thank you so much.
Hey, it's always a pleasure.
On this week's On the Media, one Washington Post reporter describes the announcement that Amazon boss Jeff Bezos had bought his paper as being like a funeral.
But a funeral where you didn't know the person had died in the first place. Thank you for coming. Grandpa has just died.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
On the Media, Sunday morning at 11, here on KUAF.
Earlier this week, we told you about the latest Emmy nominations for University of Arkansas professors for their documentaries. Beyond producing award-winning works, these professors have also produced another generation, at least, of documentary filmmakers. Clint Fullen is one of those younger producers. Later this summer, his documentary about Jim Lindsay, football player turned real estate businessman, will have its premiere in Fayetteville. Clint came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio recently to talk about the film, and he says this project began when he approached his mentor and University of Arkansas professor Larry Foley for documentary ideas.
So I simply just went to him and I asked him, do you know of anything that's good? And he said he gave me a couple projects, but the one that stuck was the story about Jim Lindsay.
Did you know much about Jim Lindsay before that moment that Larry said, here's an idea?
I was... I had a small relationship with him. A few years before, I was the station manager at UATV, which is the student-run television station up at the University of Arkansas. And he was kind enough to do a studio renovation for us. So through that process, I got to know many of his contractors and some of his team. So very, very small relationship. I knew he was a former football player, and I knew he definitely had this, this vast organization in real estate development. So, you know, to be truthful, at first I didn't think the project was for me. I thought he was too well known and that I wouldn't be able to put my own spin on it. I had this fantasy that I'd be able to go out and find this wonderful story that'd be quirky and humorous, and I could produce my own little documentary about it. But then I sat on it for a little while. I thought, this man's life is just too impressive for me not to want to figure out the motivations behind everything. And so that was sort of the key to it, is how do you, what drove him through all these experiences?
I've known Larry Foley for a while. I've talked to him about some of his projects, and he'll research and research and then research some more. And if he didn't have a deadline, I have a feeling he'd just keep researching forever. Mm-hmm. So you have a living subject here.
Yeah.
So how did it begin?
It's research, research, research. My theory about filmmaking or documentary filmmaking, small budgets, is that it's all fear-driven.
Right.
That you're going to miss out on some sort of fantastic story and it's going to hurt the integrity of your piece, or, it's going to lack this great strength in it that you could have just found if you spent a few more hours on that Saturday back in April reading through old textbooks or old history books on Arkansas football. So it started with football, Arkansas football, NFL football, the Minnesota Vikings. And so I knew there was available text there. Moved on to periodicals. I know this can't be true, but for a while there, I thought I possibly read every material that had his name printed on it. I was digging up everything, huge files, just piling up around my home. And so sorted it all out, made a gigantic outline, and started cutting it down from there. What was the most necessary information for the audience to know? Because my biggest fear, again, was that I was going to lose the audience's attention and lose their interest and, you know, want to have that emotional weight the whole way along.
There's a story, I believe it's Jim Lindsay, who bought the land that eventually became the Northwest Arkansas Mall. And legend has it, you may tell me, since you've done the documentary, that there were a lot of people who thought it was kind of folly for him to buy that.
Especially his father.
Oh.
He's from East Arkansas. He's the son of a farmer, and his mother was a sharecropper's daughter. So we're talking about soybeans and cotton. You know, that was life over there. He grew up in those fields, and he buys this tract of land in Northwest Arkansas, and it's this rocky mountaintop. He paid 3 or 4 times more for it than what you could get good farmland back out in the Delta. And he brought his dad up to come look at it. They drove around up near the hills where the mall is now. And his father essentially told him he was being foolish. He said, you can't grow anything up on those hills. And 3 years later, he sold it for a gigantic profit and really started, you know, this I don't want to use the word empire, but this large real estate development organization.
Has he seen the finished product yet?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what, did you watch it with him? Did you hand off a copy? And what's that like? Because if you're doing a documentary about Abraham Lincoln, the guy's been dead 150 years. If it's someone who's alive and, you know, you're handing it over, this is what I've done.
I think, again, there's a huge fear of that you're going to show them something and they're going to fear that they're going to say that it doesn't reflect them in the right way. And I think what we did a good job with this film is that it's a reflection of the historical time period, of the stories that happened at that time, but also about his character and him as a personality. I tried to have the visual style, the through line of all of it to be a reflection of him. It's scary. You're going to take a man who's in his late 60s, and you're going to take his entire life and boil it down into 30 minutes and say, these are the most important things. You don't want them to feel like their life is a summation of soundbite.
You said you were hoping that you would get this quirky sort of story. You still looking for that one at some point?
You know, I'm working in documentary right now. And this is a certain market where certain stories are available to you. But I got into filmmaking because I liked comedies. Like John Hughes is a...
Like Breakfast Club?
Breakfast Club and Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I can watch those movies over and over again.
Were you alive when they were made?
No.
Okay.
No. I think a part of it is that what those films did, and you can lump Back to the Future in with this too, is that they sort of stereotyped or they took the elements of that time period and they did heightened levels of it. Uh-huh. It was like those films are instant nostalgia. And so when we separate ourselves from them in a time period, we look back and that feeling of nostalgia only has increased over time. I don't know. I wasn't alive in 1985, just shy of that. But as far as... cinema of that time period, those are my type of films that I like. Bright and light, some humor. I would like to do documentaries that have a little bit of a humor bent to them.
So that's what you want to do? I mean, if all things work out?
Yeah. I mean, right now, I want to... I thoroughly enjoyed working on this film, and it was an incredible experience. I want to keep working. I want to keep doing bigger projects, better films, increasing the industry in the state and trying to really do, keep working overall.
When will we be able to see this?
It is premiering on August 29th in Fayetteville at the York Bowl on Dixon Street. Former players and coaches are going to come out, and we're going to do a panel with Jim Lindsay, Coach Broyles, Ken Hatfield, Bill Gray, and Harold Horton. Emmy Award winner Larry Foley is going to moderate it. It'll be a wonderful little private event. I'm very excited about it. And then a month later, we'll have a free screening at the Fayetteville Public Library. We'll be down at the Hot Springs Documentary Film Festival. And then we're going to cap off our tour in for City, Arkansas in late October, which I'm extremely excited about.
Yeah, how fun will it be to watch what you've done with a room of other people seeing it for the first time?
Yeah, I've done things like this before, not to this scale, but to be able to go to East Arkansas and show these people, it'll be on Forest City High School's homecoming week, show these people who work out in the fields and have lived this life. I'm a little nervous. You know, I don't want them to think that I'm, generalizing that period of Arkansas, but I'm extremely excited, and I can't wait to share this film with other people.
Clint Fullen is a documentary film producer. He came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio this week. This is Ozarks at Large. It is Friday, August 9th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We are pleased to have Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, with us.
Let's talk about a 91-year-old painter, an organization that's been around since 1991, and an art show that's open right now at the Art Center of the Ozarks that has artists from seven states in the 19th edition of the art show.
Is this all connected?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, we're talking about the Artists of Northwest Arkansas, which started as the Fayetteville Art Association in 91. Beth Vacanti moved here from California and couldn't find any other artists to play with. So when she found them, she stuck them all together and made an organization out of them. And it's grown out of Fayetteville to the region. But I had an interesting conversation with several of them in talks about the art show that's open at ACO, that with Crystal Bridges open in Bentonville, everybody's paying attention to visual arts of an international caliber. But a lot of the visual artists working locally still haven't become that much more visible. And so what ANA is hoping right now is that not only will people go to the art show and see the caliber of work that's being done in Northwest Arkansas, but that artists working in Northwest Arkansas who feel like they're alone will go to the art show and find the ANA.
I see.
Because artists seek a community, you know, after the university.
Sure.
And the ANA is ready to provide that. They have, I think they had 200, I didn't write it down. Oh, they had 100. That's right. They had 100 artists enter 282 pieces for the show.
Wow.
It's from a 10-state region. They had seven states enter besides Arkansas. And the juror chose 90 pieces by 63 artists. And you can go tomorrow to a reception from 1 to 3 o'clock at ACO and find out who won.
That's unusual for them to have those on the weekend, no?
It is. They always do ANA on a Saturday.
Oh, okay.
So more people can come.
Fair enough.
You can actually cheat and see who won in today's What's Up.
Oh.
But you should go tomorrow and see the artwork because it's beautiful.
Many of the artists will be there, I assume?
Many of the artists will be there. Of course, this weekend is also the Taneytown Grape Festival.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tomorrow is Run for the Grapes and church tours and arts and crafts and spaghetti and carnival rides and live music by the headliner Colin Ray. Tomorrow evening.
90 gallons of spaghetti sauce a day they make.
Wow.
Yeah.
We apparently have a number theme going tonight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gravit Days is tomorrow with a Dutch oven cook-off, a poker run, a parade at 10 o'clock, a car show, and the Miss Gravit pageant at 7.
All right.
There's a play day at the library tomorrow in Fayetteville with party time ponies and snow cones.
Excellent.
At 10:30. And this is the season opener for Arts Live Theater, Ascension Day.
Do you know what that's about? Because I know the kids have been working on it for a while, but I'm not quite sure the premise.
I do. It's a coming-of-age story that's set at a summer camp. Mm-hmm. I believe it's a Lutheran summer camp.
Okay.
I might be making that up. And, of course, the kids have lived through World War II.
Okay.
So it's a coming-of-age in the post-war time.
Okay. Sounds good.
One of those more serious plays that they
right.
take on for the older kids.
And when does it open?
It opens tonight Actually, it opened last night. 7 o'clock tonight, 2 and 7 tomorrow, and 2 on Sunday at the theater at 818 North Sang Avenue in Fayetteville. And tickets are $6 and $8.
Just this weekend.
Just this weekend. Copycats at the King Opera House at 6 o'clock tomorrow night, paying tribute to the likes of Conway Twitty, Johnny Cash, Jerry Lee Lewis. If you've never been to a show at the King Opera House, what fun.
Downtown Van Buren.
The King and I wraps up this weekend at Rogers Little Theater with shows tonight, tomorrow night, and Sunday afternoon.
Shouldn't they do The King and I sometime in the King's Opera House?
I think that'd be awesome.
All right.
And if you really need something to do tomorrow night about midnight.
Oh, go to Hobbs?
Go to Hobbs State Park near Rogers. They are hosting a meteor shower watch. It's supposed to be something like 60 meteors an hour in a perfect world.
Right.
Oh, wow.
So that could be fun. It's $5 a carload. And when else would you get to go to Hobbs at midnight?
Now, you could go to Hobbs even earlier because they're going to have a moon watching party before that. That's
right.
Absolutely free. And telescopes and show you craters and, you know, as close as they can where Neil Armstrong stepped and things like that.
You think that really happened?
Oh, good grief. All right.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
That's jazz pianist and composer Amina Figueroa performing an original composition, Another Side of the Ocean. Hello, I'm Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz every Friday and Saturday evening beginning at 10 p.m. On this Friday edition of Shades of Jazz, I will feature an exclusive interview with Amina Figueroa. She'll be performing at the final concert of the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series presented by the North Arkansas Jazz Society and Walton Arts Center. That concert takes place on Friday, August 16th at the Walton Arts Center, and I'll speak with Amina about her early days in Azerbaijan and moving to Holland and ultimately ending up in New York City, where her group has garnered acclaim from jazz critics and fans alike, performing at the Newport Jazz Festival, New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Festival, and all around the world. On the second hour of the show, we'll hear music from Bobby Hutcherson, Russell Malone, Lee Konitz, and the Dave Holland Quintet. Tune in at 10 p.m. for Shades of Jazz.
This is Ozarks at Large. Heirloom is a local duo comprised of Jackson Jennings and Dana Louise Eidlett. The two met when Dana was working on paintings for a show at the Fayetteville Underground. She was searching for cross-sections of cedar to paint on when she was introduced to Jackson, who was involved with dendrochronology, or tree ring dating, at the University of Arkansas. During a visit to the Furman Garner Performance Studio last month, the musicians told Kyle and I that after meeting each other, they spent some time talking about music and exchanged their iTunes libraries before Jackson went to Finland to work on a PhD, and Dana traveled to the Azores to paint.
I mean, it was a brief, we just spent very little time together, but there was a lot of music there, a lot of talking about music and listening to music, and when we shared music is when we kind of got each other's ideas, I guess, because, of course, someone's iTunes library is kind of their, that's like their soul, they have all of their stuff there, that's their listening material, so I got all of hers, she got all of mine, and then we went separate ways and didn't see each other for few years.
Yeah.
Kind of kept in touch, email, I guess.
I started playing guitar when I went to this island, Flores in the Azores, to paint. And I ended up learning how to play guitar. And one of the first songs I learned was one of his that was on my iPod called Tied to the Sea. And then I came back home and I decided I was going to start playing, but it was really slow going. And I wasn't really booking very many shows. And just in February or something, I decided, okay, I'm really going to give it a shot. And I booked 3 dates. And my second, I was at the Perk and then Tanglewood. And Jackson showed up at Tanglewood, like, in the middle of me completely ruining my sound. Like, I had this amplifier and all these knobs and scary things. And it was feeding back. And I'm playing the first song, like, I don't have people here that can fix this. I'm just, it's all over for me. And then Jackson walked in and like, I'm panicking and asked him to help, and he did.
But that was after I sat in the back and cried a little bit listening to you sing, too, because it was so wonderful, you know? And I admit, I had missed her. I hadn't seen her in a while. So I went in and sat down by myself just to listen, just in the, you know, the back of Tanglewood. And it was really a powerful thing. And I thought, man, this is amazing. And then I knew she was struggling with the sound. I could see it. I could hear. I could tell by her the way she... And she kind of gave me this look. And then I fixed... It was just a feedback deal. So I tweaked some knobs. And then she played the rest of the night. And it was the sound was better. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then what? I sat in on a song?
Yeah, in last break I asked if you wanted to sit in on a song.
Mm-hmm. And then when we were finished there, we were like, okay. I was like, I think we need to play together. And I was like, yeah, we need to play together.
So the next day, I had Arcega's show, and he came over a couple hours before the show, and we practiced and got like 20 songs down.
Something
like that. So it just kind of, everything just fell into place.
And you've written some songs together?
We've mm-hmm. written some songs together. Yeah,
we're just so we've been playing together for 4 months now. I've been gone for a month. Mm. Well, both of us have been gone for about a month and a half even. So it's just kind of new, but I feel like we have these same kind of musical ideas and can... It's not telepathy or anything, but it kind of is a little bit like we kind of know where both of us would want a song to go, or like musically and lyrically.
So what we're trying to do is write songs together, and we're doing that. And she's written some songs on her own, and I've written some songs recently on my own. And then I was playing in a little folk band in Finland when I was there, and had a good time and learned a lot about playing with different types of people. And I've got songs that I've been writing since I was younger, since I was maybe 14 or 15. So we're kind of taking old songs as well. Of mine and putting a new spin on it and making them our own.
You mentioned you picked up the guitar in the Azores, but what I have seen online, you have a banjo.
Uh huh. Yeah, I got banjo for Christmas. my dad plays banjo. He's Ezra Eidlip from Trout Fishing, and so he's been just encouraging me. Anything I'm interested in, he's always like provided it or just pushed me in that direction. So. He got a banjo for Christmas, he and my mom did.
So you had that banjo for about 7 months?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah, she doesn't play like it.
No, not at all.
But he can explain things. I don't have like a musical mind as far as theory goes, but he explained it to me where it makes sense. So it's very similar to guitar. I play it like a guitar, kind of. So it makes sense to me, and it's not that far.
It makes sense that you explain it like that, because when Kyle and I were listening to the music before we started the interview, he had said, you know, she plays very subtly. It doesn't, you know, sound like a hardcore banjo, but it's still a banjo.
Uh-huh.
You can tell it's a banjo, but there's a much softer sort of nuanced, not to insult other banjo players,
Bueling,
if you're listening, but what I'm saying is it doesn't sound quite like other banjos that I've heard. There's a softer side or something to it.
Yeah, it's just what's coming out. I'm still learning so much, and I'm learning a lot with Jackson and, of course, with my dad. He's teaching me a lot of things.
I think part of the softness comes from the fact that she doesn't have fingernails and she's not using picks on that banjo.
Oh, okay. Oh.
So she's using her fingertips. So it is subtle and it is soft.
I'm not fancy. I don't know all that fancy banjo stuff yet.
You'll get there.
Do you read music?
No. I took piano whenever I was a kid for about 8 years, I think, and I could never read music. I would just memorize the song and kind of use it as a guideline, use the notes and the shape of it. But I remember my piano teacher would show me flashcards, and I just had no idea. Couldn't tell you what note.
So I'm amazed by this. So you pick up the guitar, you don't know how to read music, you're on this tropical island, you just start, what was the first, okay, does this, when I hit this string, it makes this sound? Let's go from there.
So I grew up around a lot of musicians and music things happening. And this guy that I met on the island from Finland, who actually had seen Jackson play. This
is an
island of 2,000 people. And he's visiting and taking care of his friend's house. So his friend's house had a guitar in it, and I had noticed it. And he told me that I should listen to this woman, Alila Diane. And so I get the CD, and the internet is so slow there, so it took me a whole night to download from iTunes this CD of hers. And I just fell in love with it and thought, I can sing like that. I want to write like that and play music, really simple guitar. And so I stole this guitar, and still haven't met the owner of the guitar, and I learned this one song called Oh My Mama. And there were four chords, and I just played and listened to which strings made up the chord, and I found it. And so I've always played by ear, I think, but I learned this song, and I practiced and practiced and practiced, and I finally showed it to this guy who was house sitting, and he wanted me to play it again and again and again. So then I just kind of got bored, and I needed to learn a new song, so I just kept learning another song because they wanted me to play in the evenings or all the time. So I ended up singing for my supper a lot.
All right, I've got to ask you about the name, because this is a very specific thing.
And for those who haven't seen it spelled, it's not heirloom as in an heirloom gift. It's air, like what you breathe, and loom, like something you would weave with.
And the heirloom was this sort of machine that this fellow thought existed. Some think that he might have been an early example of paranoid schizophrenia. He thought this heirloom was being used to blast rays at him by the British government or others. So this doesn't seem like an accident that you came up with this for your name. What?
It is. We came up with the name first and learned about James Tilly Matthews afterwards.
So was it just a play on heirloom, or?
Yeah, play on words for heirloom. So we would make notes of all these different band names as we're just starting to play together. What do you think about this?
And just words and ideas.
And nothing was really fitting. And then, I don't know, I was driving with my aunt to a Newport Art Festival, and just texted Jackson heirloom, H-E-I-R. And then he looked up on Facebook or something. Maybe you found that there was
I wanted
was
to make sure there
band.
Wasn't like a mainstream band called Heirloom, sure. And sure enough, there is. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. What if we just spelled it differently?
Yeah.
So I texted her back, A-I-R, and we were like, space there or no space, or does it matter? And then, it took me a little bit, but when I did Google and I found, I thought, wow, this is really interesting. It's a really interesting story about this guy.
It really
it's
is.
It's Bedlam and of course, it's hard to diagnose someone posthumously, but
right.
They do think that he may have been one of the first kind of
documented
case of paranoid schizophrenia.
And when you say in Bedlam, you don't mean that with a small b. That's capital B.
Right.
That was the name of
the asylum. The,
right.
Right.
So once you found that out, you said, "Oh, we're going to go with this."
Right, and he would claim that the heirloom would induce things like lobster cracking and thigh talking,
bomb bursting.
These were some of the words he used to describe the treatment that it would, the effects
brain
it would have
stretching.
On someone. Brain stretching. So, and we like those words; those are cool. Brain stretching is.
So, can we hear some lobster cracking, thigh talking,
uh-huh.
Brain stretching music?
Sure.
What do you want to start with?
Tide
to the Sea. Okay.
You want to introduce it?
Yeah. So this is one of the first songs that I learned of Jackson's. And I say I play by ear, and I listened to his song, and then I came up with these chords, which are actually nothing even resembling what he was playing. But in my head, it like twisted around and turned into this.
I think it's better now.
But he liked it, so... running, 'cause
as I can see the horizon. Gonna find out what's at the end of it. Gonna find out what's at the end. A lady caught his eye. Her name was Sadie Brown. And she was all right, all right. She said, I want to be a sailor's gal. She said, I'm tied to the sea. I gotta get out. Oh, she said, let's hit the ground running. I can see the horizon. Gonna find out what's at the end of it. Gonna find out what's at the end. I've been walking down that road.
Done lost my heavy load. This is my friend's song, my childhood friend, Joshua Tempest, and he lives up in Oregon. And he said that he started hearing this old man's voice, kind of, what's his name, Tom Waits. Kind of a Tom Waits voice telling him this song in his head, and he had to scramble for a pencil to write it down, and then he came up with these chords, and it's just an amazing song, and it was the first song that he's written. I'm not sure if he's written more after that, but he's a juggler usually, so anyway, so this is a song called Better Off Dead. And sing and to do some heinous evil things. Village elders rise from their graves. The very sight of it is quite depraved. Rituals bring them back to life. So hide your children and hide your wife. And be careful out there. Oh, be careful out there. Be careful out there. You best beware. Without a care, you'll end up in over your head. Careful out there, oh, be careful out there. Careful out there, you best beware. If you wake up from this party, you might be better off dead. There's a drink of vile kind. Take a sip and open up your mind. Be careful if you drink more. Your heart and soul become an open door. They'll step inside, change what they will. The very thought of it just makes me ill. Believe my story, for it's true. When you wake up, you might not be you. So be careful out there, oh, be careful out there. Careful out there, you best beware. Without a care, you'll end up in over your head. Careful out there, oh, be careful out there. Careful out there, you best beware. If you wake up from this party, you might be. better off dead.
That was Jackson Jennings and Dana Louise Eidlett, collectively known as Heirloom, inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio. You can catch the duo at various Fayetteville venues this week, including Greenhouse Grill on Wednesday, George's Majestic Lounge on Friday, and Mojo's Pints and Pies next Saturday. Heirloom will also be performing at 9 a.m. August 24th at our Sagas at the Depot as part of the Fayetteville Roots Festival. More information is available at facebook.com/heirloomband.
Scottish actor David Tennant doesn't think acting is all that hard.
You stand in a field with some cameras pointing at you, pretend to be someone else and recite words that somebody wrote in their room several months before. If you look at it objectively, it can feel a bit daft.
David Tennant on his latest role in the BBC crime drama Broadchurch, Saturday on Weekend Edition from NPR News.
Weekend Edition Saturday, tomorrow morning from 7 until 9 on KUAF 91.3 FM. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The 2013 Fayetteville Roots Festival is Thursday, August 22nd through Sunday the 25th. This music festival will showcase Ozark culture, roots music, and local food, as well as organic and fair trade items, jewelry, live art, and exhibits. Tickets and more information are available at FayettevilleRoots.com.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Tawnytown.
I was in Tawnytown this week.
I was there yesterday.
Did you go?
I went to the Grape Festival, and yeah. I finally got some chicken, fried chicken, and spaghetti.
I don't know if you had a chance. I did the show alone yesterday, but I got the answer to why.
Right.
Yeah.
That was great. And but, I finally got the answer to what goes on in that building and what that food tastes like.
And it's pretty good, right?
It's pretty yeah, good. It was far too much food.
Yes, it's easy to overindulge, but...
No, I definitely stopped. I felt terrible for stopping, like, halfway through. Like, a friend of mine that went with us, she was like, I keep eating, and I feel like this should be half gone, and I look at it, and it's still there.
It just never...
It's like a never-ending thing.
You never see the bottom of the plate.
I mean...
Did you have some rolls, though?
I did. They were very good. Yeah. They were very good. I mean, I didn't waste it. I shared it with everybody else that could still eat much more than I could. But
now you've done it.
Now I've done it. I was very pleased.
All right. Tonight, I'm honored to be at the Fayetteville Public Library. I Ain't In It For My Health, a film about Levon Helm, will have its Northwest Arkansas premiere. After the screening, I'll be moderating a panel discussion, including friends and musicians who knew Levon for a long time. That's tonight at the Fayetteville Public Library.
Sounds good.
I think it will be. All right. I'm alone again on Monday. You and I back together Tuesday at noon. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Have a safe weekend.